order. And figure we can... Oh, gosh. Tiffany, I needed to see you about something. I'm not sure yet. Okay, well, welcome to the committee. And we'll have our undivided attention. And I believe this is the formality, just the report that you have to update the legislature on, and we'll get it on the record.
Great.
Good afternoon. It's good to have you. You want to identify yourself for the record?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I'm Bruce Warner, the director of the Oregon Department of Transportation. I'll make my statements real brief. I really want to turn it over to Mr. Lillet and Mr. Marsh to give you the update on the Oregon Transportation Investment Act, which is something the legislature is very interested in. As you know, it's a program that is a result of really the first new transportation revenues in a decade for the state of Oregon. Started out at $400 million, after the special session, $500 million. And I think you're going to hear today that it's actually with the participation of public and private partnerships in the projects. We expect it's going to be $650 million worth of program when we're done. So we're very pleased with where things are going.
An economic development program right there, isn't it?
You bet it is. And so with that, I think I'm going to turn it right over to Tom Lillet, if I could, Mr. Chairman, unless you have questions for me.
No. Go ahead. Tom?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, for the record, I'm Tom Lillet, the Deputy Director for the Oregon Transportation Investment Act. And I think you have in front of you the what I'll speak from, and I'll try to just work my way through it. House Bill 2142 was enacted, and this will just be a status report of that measure.
By the way, you're aware that all legislators get kind of a review of kind of major things that happen in these committees. So actually, even though there's just one of us here, right, it gets into the packet, so all legislators get the synopsis of what happens. So you're not talking completely in vain.
This is fine with me. The department and the local agencies were challenged to meet the timelines that were set by the bill. The bill had been implemented since it was signed by the governor. It required $400 million of projects be selected by February 1st of 2002, and that the Transportation Commission established the process and guidelines to be used in selecting. A total of $200 million was made available for modernization projects. So these are the projects where we had capacity, and $200 million was available for preservation of both pavements and bridges. An additional $115 million of local agency participation, or leverage dollars, if you will, were also included. So the original $400 million is at about $515 of total project dollars. The participation of area commissions on transportation, the metropolitan planning organizations, and other local agencies was woven into the selection process. This process was completed at the January OTC meeting. We did meet then the requirements of projects being selected by February. What it did do, though, was stir up a tremendous flurry of project delivery activity then. Once they were selected, we needed to move into delivery. The measure was unique in that it added a significant amount of money, but no staff. And so we knew as it was working its way through the legislature that there was going to be a challenge. An additional challenge came with the economic downturns after September of 2002. And so even though we had anticipated spending the money, and if you recall, it would have been $100 million in the first biennium, $200 million in the next, and $100 million as a third, we look then to accelerate. And now what we're really looking for is $170 million in the first biennium, $190 million in the second, and only $40 million in the third. So we've moved everything up that was possible to move up. The table, and I'll just cover these quickly, this one, which is a chart, it's called Delivery, is a listing of all 131 projects that were selected. The project name, the city or county that it's in, the PREZ local bridge or MOD refers to the type of project. So the first one you see is a preservation project in Lane County. The delivery year is 2002. We expect the construction to last 1 year, and ODOT will do the delivery on this one. If you look down a bit further, you see the Coast Fork of the Willamette. We expect a consultant to deliver. And in some of the projects, we have local agencies. So three types of delivery were looked at by us. We used this information to try to stage the bond sales. This next chart, which is a bar chart, shows the year we expect these projects to come out, if you will. You'll notice by looking at them that the preservation and bridge projects come out more quickly in the first 2 years. A good share of that is done, and that's this chart. I'm sorry to have switched before you.
No, I'm sorry. I'm just looking at this one. And
if you have questions for the first one, I'll be glad to answer those. The modernization projects take a little longer, and you'll notice that actually 2005 is a large year for modernization projects. There's more local involvement.
Excuse me, this is the... Wait, what did I miss on the bridge? This is the total modernization program dealing with highways or bridges?
It's $400 million of modernization and bridge work and preservation work.
So this chart includes both bridges and
highways.
Okay, that's what I was trying to get at.
And then you've seen this one?
Yeah, I see it over here. Yeah.
Okay. We have all three types of projects shown. The third colorful chart is this one that shows pie charts. And it was to try to show the breakdown of these projects as they were dispersed around the regions. It was the intent of the bill that there be a distribution of these projects across the state. The pie charts, as you look at them, the first one shows the distribution of all funds. The next one, where the modernization projects were dispersed, then pavement preservation, and finally bridge.
That's where I was having trouble to go, when you're using the word modernization, because bridges are not generally considered. In the you've got them separate here. Modernization and bridges are separate.
That'd be correct.
Yeah.
And then the preservation here refers to the pavement preservation work. And the bill called for that to be on our district level highways. And the final pie chart just shows the breakdown of the ODOT work, and less than half of this work will be delivered by ODOT. So we did rely heavily on other methods of delivery to handle that with our current staff. And I think early on we anticipated we might add a very small amount of staff, but as we moved into it, have decided that we'll just use the current staffing levels. This last one...
How does that compare with generally what you've done historically between private versus the state? I know you haven't done much building in the last few years, but...
Prior to the OTIA work coming on, we were probably at 10 to 15% of our work being done by consultants. This takes us significantly past that level.
Mm-hmm.
And if you'll see in the later parts of the presentation, we had to modify how we're doing work to recognize these higher levels of consultant activity. Even the work here where ODOT is doing some of the OTIA, the net result is the work they intended to do is being done by a consultant. But there were some projects as we constructed them, we have an OTIA one as part of another one, it made more sense to just have our staff do the entire project. The net result, though, is the $400 million amount has to be done by staff other than ODOT in one form or another, because we did not add staff.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Can you break that percentage down by design versus construction? Is most of the design still done by ODOT, or are you farming some of that out too?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dukes, I'll cover it down here, but what we're really doing because of this is changing how we do our work. The work that's going to be done by ODOT will be done entirely by ODOT, the design, the construction. The building itself is done by contractors.
Right. Okay.
If a consultant project is envisioned, we would have the consultant on board to do the design. We would award the contract, but the consultant will monitor the construction. So they're responsible for their entire project. So we really create two significant ways to do work. Prior to this, we had a project where all of the work was done by ODOT, except maybe the bridge, which we had a bridge consultant do. Another one may have had all the work done except the hydraulic design. So it was more each discipline supplanted its own staff with consultants. Moving to this higher level required us to really say, you got two ways to do business. Let's build our staffing around ODOT-delivered projects and consultant-delivered. And so then you'll see the construction still performed by private contractors, but a consultant who did the design work taking full responsibility for it through the construction so they can handle the construction changes to their own design.
So we don't have anybody looking over the consultant's shoulder?
We have consultant project managers who will manage...
Those are ODOT people.
These are ODOT people who will have the responsibility for consultant project management. And we are in the process of hiring those people, but we used vacant positions to create those. We didn't add any staff.
Okay. But we do have somebody working with them, and we're still writing into the contracts that if the project is beyond deadline, that there's a price to be paid for that and those sorts of things. I mean,
yeah.
I love the idea of handing it over to outside people, and that was the intent of this $400 million, was to create jobs and get it out there. But I know that from time to time when we do that, try to do that sort of thing, it doesn't come in quite the way we had anticipated. And then some community is calling some legislator saying, why'd you do a dumb thing like this?
Senator, if I might ask, I believe that in many cases, when you looked at the root cause of that, you find the communication between part of a project done by ODOT and part being done by a consultant didn't help a project go more smoothly. So I believe when we assign the total project to a consultant or the total one to ODOT, we'll get rid of some of that inefficiency and at least the reasons for some of the delays.
And see, what I saw was a lot of times it was a contractor who was trying to do three jobs at the same time, so the equipment was over on the other job because, after all, this was a government job, so we could wait a little bit. And that's why I want somebody looking over their shoulder, because then they'll know before the road falls apart again that maybe the mix was off or something.
Well, if I could just, we wanted these projects to come out quickly and to be constructed quickly, and for the public to know that they were done differently than maybe the experience had been in the past. There will be an OTIA sign designating these projects, so you'll know when you drive through one.
I'm not sure we're spending on signs. I'm sorry.
You what?
I wonder how much we're spending on the signs to advertise ourselves.
They're very...
And the legislature doesn't deserve a whole lot of credit for doing a good thing once in a while. And so and the public has got enough stuff to look at as they're driving along. You guys yourselves have restrictions on how many signs can be on the, and you won't let the Columbia City folks have their little sign. Don't put up any extras and spend money on it, please.
If I might, what we intended to do would be to have a contractor who has what we're considering to be a window within a window that there may be from now until September to get that project completed. But once you disrupt traffic, you only have this much time. To allow that contractor, there's an efficiency to having them do three projects. But once you begin construction and you disrupt traffic, you have a very small amount of time. So stay on the project, complete the project, and get back the project to normal traffic. And so those concepts are going into these projects. And if you hear the term window within a window, the bigger window allows a contractor to schedule three or four projects. The smaller one says, once you start one of these, make sure that you don't go for a week at a time and don't see anyone on the project. I think that was very hard to defend. And so these were incorporated into the timeliness.
No, I...
2 seconds. Second, think the signs, please. I hate those. We used to do that with lottery. Remember that? Every time we gave somebody money for a lottery project, we plunked this great big sign down and said, your lottery dollars at work. I don't know what that means. Go back to the video poker machines. It's doing a good thing.
The one thing I did think of, and I have great respect for both private enterprise and for government, and I... You know, there's a feeling oftentimes, let the privates do it, and everything will just work out absolutely beautifully, on time, everything. Mm-hmm. And I think government can be as efficient. I think you guys do a good job, too. So it's interesting when you're trying to get something done with the privates. Sometimes they go off on another job, and you wonder if they'll ever get back. I see that all the time.
Mr. Chairman.
Just a little defense of government.
The one piece that the new delivery model does have is it was very difficult to evaluate just what you talked about. But if the project is delivered by an ODOT group of people, we expect it to be evaluated at least twice during its delivery, once when it goes to contract and once when it's finished, The same with the consultant one. So we can learn from each method of delivery who's doing which better and who could learn from the other. And it was hard to do when it was piecemeal work. So we anticipate being able to learn from each other and each advance in the efficiency of delivery. This particular chart, if I could refer to it, was used to determine the bond sales. The very top of that chart, the little green one, shows our normal construction season in each year. Normally, there's a high period of construction in the better months. Because these are tax-free municipal bonds, there must have been a reasonable expectation to spend that money within 36 months. And so that's the first red line, is that if we sold bonds in May, which is about what we did, we could pick up parts of two full construction seasons, but the 36 months would expire before the 2005 season. There's an absolute limit that says even though you had a reasonable expectation for 36, you must absolutely spend all the money within 60, and that's the blue line underneath. And so we use this to determine, with that project schedule you saw at first and the expected number of construction seasons, the amount of the bond sales. And I think Mike's going to cover later that first bond sale then was $225 million, which was just accomplished. There will be a second issuance and possibly a third one because of this, the timing of the bond sales is new for ODOT because we haven't used bonded revenue very much in the agency's conducting business. I think in moving through the project delivery piece, I did cover most of what was in here. We did institute one other concept with the internal part, and it's termed the pens down concept. It's at the top of page 3. One of the things that we determined was we needed to also speed up the method of doing the work inside. A couple of the processes waited long into the delivery process before they could start. Two examples would be right-of-way acquisition and the permitting process. A pens-down concept means we get to a certain point. The top of page 3, did I?
You said top of page 3. I'm not seeing. Pens-down.
Let me make sure that my page numbers coincide with yours. I'm sorry, I have a different one. It's in the middle of page 2. I'm sorry, Senator.
Oh, I see it.
Mm-hmm. Real briefly, the pens down concept means at 30% design, we lock down on the certain elements and say, let's be sure of this part. Okay. The environmental permitting and right-of-way can then begin. The reason they wait so long now is if we make too many changes, the redo is just too much to accommodate, so they've waited till the end. But pens down means everybody who has input, and we've agreed on the basic concepts of this design enough to begin the environmental permit process and the right-of-way acquisition. And we will use that both for the consultant-delivered projects and our own, and it should shorten then the delivery time significantly. And I think it will be something that will take us a year to really see how quickly it moves into, but it might be at a subsequent report we'd want to bring back to you. It has saved. I believe it will.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
And my guess is you're going to get more projects done.
I certainly hope
because it's in those latter things where we usually get held up in the environmental stuff and the right-of-way. I mean, it only takes one person within Wassell, and you're there all the way through the court. So if those things are going to happen, to know about them earlier should be a real advantage.
I believe so, Senator. The projects are already underway, and I'll just report that the first two significant ones were design-build projects. We also wanted to use innovative contracting methods, and so a bridge on Interstate 5 and one on Interstate 84 have both been awarded. They went design-build. We anticipate traffic being allowed, at least on the detour portions of those structures, by the time the session starts, with construction completed within the first year. The bids came in significantly under our estimates. We had a firm from here in the Valley who was the successful bidder on both of those. And so it's beginning for us to get a better handle on this method of shortening that time frame by allowing their design to start. while, and we had the permits in hand, so they were able to have contracts awarded. I think in June they'll be underway in both projects.
Yeah, I'm just curious. You mentioned it came in under what you'd anticipate the bid. I guess the thing that surprised me a little bit, I'm sure that aren't the contractors aware of the money we have available? I mean, doesn't that kind of skew it just a little bit in their favor? I mean, to know...
Mr. Chairman, the design build still has a competitive nature to it. It's a combination of their project and their price. And so it's that competitive pricing piece that has all of them work against it. And so it may seem as design build isn't price driven, but for us it's a combination of the price not to exceed.
I think that's great. I just sort of visualize this figure that they know is available out there, and it's amazing how the bid gets right close to it. That's great.
The additional revenue piece is the last item. House Bill 4010 was passed during the special session, which encouraged or allowed for an additional $100 million. At the meeting of the OTC, which just took place this week, we're moving into the final stages of project selection, and we're anticipating having those projects selected by July when the commission is back in Salem. The projects, again, $50 million or half of it for modernization, and the other $50 for a combination of bridge and preservation. The projects were required to have been on the list for OTIA 1, so a project couldn't come in from the unknown, and that was difficult because many needy projects are there. So we're working through the issues. I think we'll be able to come to all the public input necessary to select those in the final phases in July. And that will bring additional leverage funds. I think we saw as many as $18 million of additional either private or local agency contribution to get these to match. So I think the total impact of what started out as a $400 million Transportation Investment Act will near $650 million of construction work. That's exciting. Tremendous contribution by the communities and by businesses to get some of these projects to come. So I hope our performance can encourage the legislature to reconsider this as a good way to do work.
You know, I hope someplace along the line, I hope some of you agree with me on this. I think the department has taken a lot of bashing through the years a little bit. But I've had a chance through this process. I've been to a lot of the commission meetings and involved in a lot of things. And I guess I'm just pretty impressed with the way they're moving forward on some of these things right now. And I guess I just somehow really want to convey that to you and hope it gets to your staff, because I think morale-wise, they need to know that some people are seeing the good things. I've just been very impressed as I had a chance to be involved with a lot of the groundbreaking kinds of things and with the commission and the meetings and the whole attitude. And the involvement of, there's a lot of local involvement, too. And as you say, the leverage kind of thing that's come out of this whole thing. I think it's been one of the greatest win-win situations I've seen us do recently. I don't know what your reaction is. I don't want to put you on the spot. But.
I think over the last few years, the agency has learned a lot. And it used to be a pretty inflexible agency, and it isn't anymore. And that's helped us. I mean, design build is not something that would ever have come out of the mouth of an ODOT employee 5 years ago. It came out of the legislature regularly. We just never got there. And so I think, there's far more cooperative effort and more of a partnering, which is why then you see the legislature willing to give money and try to...
That's a win-win kind of thing, I see.
Yeah.
And even coming back to the special session to opportunity for more money there, too. So I think we ought to convey that message somehow or other to you.
We'll be done. Thank you.
I'm talking about to the staff, too. I mean, I get to tell Bruce and you guys all the time that I'm really impressed with the commission, but, where I'm living down there's been, felt like he or she's been bashed, and I think their work is really appreciated.
But with that, I think Mike is going to be able to speak about the bonding effort itself.
Yeah, this doesn't go to Mike, by the way. I mean, this
is... Mr. Chair, I was just sitting here, and Tom was turning it over and thinking,
5 years ago, we couldn't have asked anything about the bonding and got anything that made any sense. So the agency has changed a lot.
Mike,
and it's really great to be able to get a coherent response on financial issues.
Yeah.
See, they have to.
Pretty great having you too.
I'm Mike Marsh from ODOT. I'll just do a couple of quick things along with the win-win discussion we've had already. Wanted to indicate where the bonding is at this point to give you some perspective. First of all, we're at the point of up to $500 million of bonding that we'll be seeking. We've gone out right now, and the bonding is going this week, as a matter of fact. The way that works is that we have an absolute pledge against the funds that are in the highway fund, the entire highway fund. If we get $71.2 million each biennium from the 2142 and 4010 revenues, we don't have to go into the rest of the highway fund. If, on the other hand, the revenues that come in from those two bills and the fees that were increased are not quite enough, we'll go into the rest of the highway fund. But it makes the process very sure for the agencies that are coming forward to buy the bonds, and they know that we're going to be a sound investment. Also, the amount of bonding that we've actually done is still relatively small compared to capacity, and we have the ability to keep the risk low because we have other capacity that is available, as well as the flexibility that was granted by the legislature to have us do different lengths of time on the bonds, as well as different kinds of bonds, in order to make sure we stay within the requirements. We've had a great team working, underwriters, bond counsel, financial groups that have been there to help us work through the process, as well as the Treasurer's Office and the Attorney General. Where we are now, we've gone out, the bonds have been rated. They're rated AA+. We went out for $226 million. The rating itself is a statement about the financial management of the agency.
A question, Mike.
Yes, Mr.
That, I'm trying to remember what's so you can get a better bond rating than the state.
Correct, Mr. Chair. Our rating is better than the GO rating for the state as well. And reasons for that are
certainly
the highway funds coming through, as well as the financial management and controls that exist with the legislature, the Constitution, as well as the agency's management. So it's a statement about
what does
Oregon.
What does it show from a plus to a something? What would be the percentage?
The difference between a AA and a AA plus? Big. The difference between that kind of distinction makes us stick out above other departments of transportation. I think there are about six in the nation that probably have a AA+. So when the bond rating agencies look at us, when the private sector is looking at us, there's a lot more surety there. And that's why the news that I have next is particularly good.
The response back was
when we went out in the marketplace, not only was there a very positive response, in the first hour there was more than enough demand to buy all our bonds in the marketplace. Number two, the rate that we got was 4.99%, which is an amazing rating. And if you think about where we were during the session, basically a year ago, rates at that time were in the neighborhood of 5.2, something in that neighborhood, which would have added about $8 million worth of additional interest costs to the period of the bonds if we had to have something like an 8.25 or 5.25 or 5.2. With the 4.99, we save money. We've been able to do some flexibility moves within the acceleration of the bonds that we can definitely get out there and get that $500 million sold and the projects on the ground and within the dollars that you've set aside.
Yes.
So it's a very positive statement. I think the response from the marketplace is very positive for the state of Oregon.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair?
Yes.
As we're talking about accolades and things, the good rating and the good interest rate is a tribute to a lot of things, but mostly to Mike Marsh. You have turned the financial end of ODOT around when a lot of people didn't think it could happen. And certainly you've had support from the directors you've worked under and staff, but that's why we've got it. I mean, you don't have to go back very far to remember what kind of shit. When we're passing laws to tell an agency what kind of accounting system they have to use, things are pretty bad, and that's why we're there.
Was it worth coming over this afternoon, Mike?
Mr. Chair and Senator, I have to defer that to the agency, to Tom Lule, to the director, to the folks actually did the work on the
probably
ground.
Better.
We appreciate the compliment.
That's nice, but I know where it came from.
Well, we won't have a debate on that subject.
It just goes to the whole thing. I think you're getting a feeling that there's there's a good feeling.
Thank you very much.
You're not leaving soon, are you?
Well, the only one that's leaving is this guy here. We'll hold on to him as long as we can.
Mm-hmm.
And just to complete the discussion, Mr. Chair, I wanted to indicate that we are working closely with local governments on both the project process as well as on how the funding is working. So we're communicating with them to try to give them perspective about how this acceleration is affecting the dollars in the ATIA fund. By moving, accelerating the projects forward, it does reduce the amount of money that's in the highway fund initially and reduces the distribution to local governments as well as to ODOT. But we feel that by aggressively moving it forward, we're saving money in the long term because of the lower interest rate.
You know, Janet, I'm just thinking, it wouldn't be a bad idea for us to draft. I'd like this for us to draft. I look at you. For us to draft a letter we might share with our colleagues, just highlighting, I mean, just a one-pager, kind of highlighting this so that our colleagues are hearing this too, because a lot of those people are going to be back, and we need to start drumming into them the things that are happening. So,
okay.
And Senator,
that's a good idea.
Let Senator Dukes have her shot at it too. So.
Oh, Janet will do a great job.
Well, Janet will, I know, but I just want her to be sure you see it too. And okay. We'll get something out to our colleagues so that they see it.
Sharon, for your time.
Yeah. Now, do you have good news?
Well,
I'm wanting stuff. What do you want? This is the city.
Good to see you.
Thank you. For the record, Bill Penhollow, representing the Association of Oregon Counties, and your committee administrator invited us to come and give you a very brief overview of the benefits of OTIA, or the Transportation Investment Act, for county projects, which I have provided you here. I've also attached to that something a little more lengthy that I'm not going to go through, but just leave it with you for your own perusal. I think, as you've heard already, the background, and we all know the House Bill 2142 and the amount of bonds that were authorized. What I've done here, Mr. Chair, Committee Member Dukes, is indicate to you what this means to counties. Overall, with the projects that were approved by the Transportation Commission in January, this is, of course, before the what we call OTIA 2, before the additional bonds that were authorized in the special session. So this is just from the bonds authorized in the regular session, Mr. Chair. But there are 27 county bridge projects being funded out of that $400 million bond program for modernization projects, for pavement preservation projects, and obviously all of the projects benefit the citizens of Oregon, benefit the transportation system. So we all benefit from the entire investment. But this is just for the moment focusing on county projects.
Now, is this part of the leverage?
Yes. If you turn to the spreadsheet that I have on the second page, Mr. Chair, you can see an indication of the leverage, at least from the county projects. You run down those 35 projects, you see the total project cost is just under $60 million, and investing in that about $40 million in OTIA funds. So there's the difference, about $20 million coming from other funds, generally from other county road funds. So that's demonstrating the leverage and the expandability, if you will, that we get from the investment of these bonding funds. Not all 36 counties got projects, but 18 of the 36 counties qualified for projects. And pardon me if I repeat something that was said earlier, because I did come in a few minutes after it had started, but it's my recollection that when the commission went through the total list of projects submitted initially under OTIA 1, there was something in the neighborhood, I believe, of $1.2 billion in project requests, or about three times what we had available with funds from the 2142. However, some of that has been taken up by the leveraging and bringing other funds to project. I've also indicated here of the $60 million in projects that will be on the county system, kind of an indication of how those will roll out. I want to also compliment the Department of Transportation of working with cities and counties in expediting the agreement that we needed to get these local government projects authorized, the intergovernmental agreement that we need to have with ODOT to make sure that we understand all the rules of the game. It was expedited so that, as a matter of fact, I think we have one city project that if it isn't completed, it's near completion in Seaside. And we have a number of other
projects. Well, I feel better about that because I've been looking at these lists. On counties, and I was saying there's a real faux pas when you have a senator from Clatsop County right here, and I didn't see anything for Clatsop County. Did you notice that?
Well, it's not the county. He's listing projects. The money is going to the county, and this isn't going to the county. It's a project with the city.
Well, but
do I understand that, in reading this correctly, that the Seaside 101 project is going to be a two-year project done during the Lewis and Clark Bicentennial? It says 2005.
Where are you seeing that? I'm not missing that.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was back on ODOT's piece.
Yeah. Oh, you're back over there.
The list is... It says it's a... That one. I don't know. Does it have a page number?
That's the Pacific Blue Lead.
Yeah. Says it's a two-year project. I'm assuming starting or finished. If it's finished in the year 2005, that's not so much of an issue. If it's starting in 2005, just a curiosity.
I'll check into that.
Oh, okay.
Probably Kathy Mullen will get the answer through her. Okay.
Good point. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, let's finish, Bill. Like, I'm looking at the time. I'm going to have to kind of keep this.
Very good. Well, the bottom line, again, is that we will be rolling out projects at the county level, 10 in 2002, 10 more in 2003, 13 in 2004, and with the current funding, two more in 2005. On the spreadsheet that I provided you, we've also given you at least a preliminary indication of additional county projects that will be funded with OTSU.
Oh, yeah.
There must be a leftover list.
Oh. Yes, we were.
Never known him to come without one, so.
Well, as I said, you know, we had about $1 for every $3 of need or project request. So the list was about several pages long, and we got into the first couple of pages, certainly on bridges. Bridges, we have an existing system where we identify the bridges, their deficiencies in kind of a priority list, what we call a jurisdictionally blind list with the state, and we just kind of try to go down through that, dealing with the bridges that are in the worst shape, and regardless of whose jurisdiction it is. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. It was interesting. I hadn't thought about it before, but Multnomah County gets the top of the list and the bottom of the list of these two. I hadn't realized the area of the square miles and the population.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I can't let the opportunity go by. They did get to Clatsop County. Well, they didn't get to the Astoria Bypass yet.
Do you want to make a comment on this? How long have you been talking about the Astoria Bypass?
Well, I've only been here since 87, but the thing has been on their list of things to do for about 40 years now.
And she is not term limited any longer, so you she's going to be around here a long, long time, so they better take care of that.
We had it up to construction. It was ready to be built. To do it now, they have to start at square one. It's been delayed that long, so we have to start all over again.
Excuse me, one moment. Bruce, do you have a second? Can you come up for just a second? I want to ask you a question. Are you in a hurry?
Can you stick around? I've got these kids who just, I want to introduce you to them. Okay. All right. All right, now we're ready to move to the bridges.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Chair?
Oh, yes.
Excuse me, Tom. I have a letter of testimony. Andrea Fogg from League of Oregon Cities could not be here, but she usually comes up with Bill to talk about the city projects, and I have her testimony. Her spreadsheet got stuck in her computer yesterday, so we don't have the spreadsheet of times for each project, but we have a total project on this page, so I'll pass that out for the record against Andrea Fogg's testimony, and they have 11 city bridges, 15 city modernization projects, and 9 city preservation projects that were funded through OTIA plus a local match. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you for that. Okay. Well, Tom, you're up now on bridges.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. The bridge presentation is this one. And I think it's just coming.
Oh, it's coming.
Got it.
Got 10 seconds or no, we really can't.
And so I'll just begin to go through it. It's a lot of basic information as you move through it. We have nearly 6,600 bridges in the state. Bridges generally characterized by more than 20 feet long. And I think that characterization is used for some federal reasons. About 3,900 local bridges and around 2,700 state bridges, referring to who owns the bridge.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator.
Does that number include private bridges?
I do not believe so.
Okay.
We have 10 owned by other agencies, but I have a feeling they are other federal agencies. So it's generally a bridge open to public travel.
Your bridge going across, who owns that bridge?
It's managed by, good heavens, I get it confused with Lewis and Clark. I think we manage the one in Astoria. The one at Longview Rainier is managed by the state of Washington. I don't know who that. I think it's a joint relationship, so it may be jointly owned.
On the interstate bridges over the Columbia, the ownership is joint, and generally we alternate as you work your way upriver. And who does the work, the other agency pays the bill for half. So I think ODOT maintains that story, and you move up to St. Helens, and Washington does that one, and we pay part. And so those that are jointly shared by two states. And I'm not sure whose inventory they're on.
I think Astoria's on ours, and I know that Rainier is on Washington's. And can I make a request?
Mm-hmm.
While you're doing bridges, I know it's a county bridge, but now that I'm, thanks to the Secretary of State, have an interest in this, could you throw in the Savvy Allen Bridge somewhere in your presentation while you're at it? Thank you.
And I have another question for you, Tom. Since you're the expert on this whole area, and you know the safety of bridges, and I assume that there's some bridges out there that are not safe, is that right? Can you tell me the route you travel to bypass some bridges?
Mr. Chairman,
you don't have to be detailed.
Yes, I would differ with you. I believe all the bridges are safe.
They're all safe.
They're all safe.
For now.
If you're in a passenger car.
Some are. They're safe for the trucks that are allowed to drive on them.
Okay.
We put restrictions on the weight of trucks.
Okay.
Based on their capacity. And some of them have gotten quite low. Some of them are only open to cars. But if we felt that a bridge was unsafe, we would close it.
Okay.
And in some cases, they're closed for a period of time until we can determine that. So the safety overwhelms our ability to carry commerce.
So I can drive on a bridge and feel that, hey, you guys, you'll back me up on it.
Yes, Senator.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
Come down my way, and it's not the structural safety always as much as we have some one-way bridges. One-lane bridges.
I'm only going to go one way.
Yeah, but if somebody else is coming the other way because they're two-lane roads.
No. Okay. I'm going to let you finish this.
The next chart shows when they were built, and the bridges are getting older, and since 1988, I've been speaking, I was a state bridge engineer then, about this large population that's aging. During the interstate construction, we built a large number, and they're all getting old at the same time. I believe I'm in the baby boomer group, and we're all getting older too, but this bridge one is a concern of me. How long do bridges last? It does really vary. The construction material, the wood lasts the shortest, and we've replaced most wooden bridges, not all. The climate, the bridges on the coast are in the salt environment, so they have a shorter life. The end of a useful service life for us is when we remove the ability to carry that minimum legal load, which is 80,000 pounds. It's still there. It still may be open to cars, but from a when we judge its service life is over, it can't carry commerce any longer.
Mm-hmm.
The significant changes that have occurred, I'm on page 7.
Mm-hmm.
There have been changes in the way we design structures. There have been changes in the loads. The traffic travels at greater speeds than in the years some of these were designed. Chart 8 shows just an indication of the volume of truck traffic from 1965 with vehicle miles of traveled. There are significantly more trucks. But page 8 shows the types of trucks. They are capable of hauling more today, which has its benefits, and it also has a downside, I suppose. But they get heavier. If you're worried about air condition, you would just as soon have them longer so there isn't as much pollution. So the longer loads and the heavier loads have a benefit and a downside. But they have changed since the time they were designed. We have a group of bridges that need work now, and on page 10, we have the cracked bridge.
Wait, I have a question. The figure I finally have learned to understand is, and we said a truck making a turn, just on a turn on any street, that truck does as much damage as 10,000 passenger cars making that same turn.
I'm not aware of that information.
Bruce, I've been hearing that figure. I think I heard that at the transportation, because I've been repeating that, and that's why
I went to downtown Astoria, where they have to take up both lanes and the sidewalks, too.
Well, now, one of our Clackamas County people told me that showed me the road situation one day. He said, one Lincoln Continental making a turn, 10,000 of them would make the same kind of damage that one truck or one trying that bus making that same turn.
We can try to get back to you, Senator, on that. The pavement design is based on equivalent loads, and they are the heavy loaded axle loads. The thing that changes for Oregon is the studded tire damage, which is different than the truck weight. But truck weight has a more of an impact to both pavement and bridges than does the light cars. But I'll get an answer back.
Okay. The reason I asked was because, I was curious about the impact of a truck on one truck going across versus the cars going across that same bridge.
But if your city person was talking about city traffic, a lot of those city streets were not built to the standards that we build highways today or refurbish bridges with. And so, it's like the city of Astoria. We have a lot of trucks rumbling through there, but...
Well, I just heard the other day someone said the research is being done with universities now shows that that's true. And I'd heard it before, and then they reconfirmed. There's a different group saying that. Were you in on that discussion?
I've heard the figure in the last week also.
Yeah.
We'll
I'm just curious about it. Okay, let's go ahead. I'm sorry.
The bridges that need work we have in 4 categories. The cracked bridge population is one we're dealing specifically with. There's a vulnerability to earthquakes, which is another program, our seismic retrofit program. The historic and coastal bridges. Stand alone because of the nature of them, trying to rehabilitate them rather than replace them.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have the normal rehabilitation and replacement work. The cracking problem, I'll just touch on, but a certain population of bridges designed in the late 40s up through the early 60s was designed in such a manner that they're failing now. They're cracking. We've spent a lot of money in the last 2 years, made a lot of detours, and are trying to patch that. They were designed correctly to the code at the time. If we did them today, we would put more reinforcing steel in. And there is a lot of them. On page 13, you can see one of the cracks in a bridge. We measure how wide open they are, how many there are, and this is a significant problem. On page 14, you can see that around 490, 487 of the bridges that were designed at this type have some degree of cracking that's been noticed. We've looked at them as 3 ranges of the severity of this cracking. We have 129 high density, 180 medium density. Both of those situations we believe are going to need replacement. They are unable to carry loads some of the heaviest loads, some of them getting down below that legal load limit. The map on page 15 shows where they are. You can kind of see that in that time frame, we were designing Interstate 5 as we came up the interstate. And then the 180 shows, or page 16 shows medium density.
Your federal dollars with on I-5, that would, you can use those monies for that.
I'll show you in a minute, Senator. We can use those, but this problem far outstrips the amount that's available.
From the federal.
The price tag on page 17 is $615 million to do the work on those with either heavy or medium density cracks. Page 18, the director asked me to put together a task force to really study this problem, and we've done that. We have a draft report out. The final version will probably be available within the next few weeks, I would anticipate. But what we wanted to do was to validate that problem and come up with some potential recommendations. The task force did validate the crack problem is real. It isn't imaginary. It isn't something that was, it is real. It's a real problem that needs to be dealt with. The recommendations were that ODOT abandon its worst first approach to bridge replacement. Prior to this large number showing up, we looked at the worst bridges and replaced those where they were in the state. So we moved to all areas. Instead, the task force recommends we move to a corridor approach, because fixing one bridge when there's still 13 on that route that have load restrictions hasn't done anything to free up the route to commerce. And so our recommendation is to look at corridors and try to free that corridor up. The first corridors that we would look at would be Interstate 84, which is our east-west interstate, and Interstate 5, which is the north-south one. Interstate 5 has by far the most of these bridges because of the time frame they were designed. By the time we got to Interstate 84, we had improved the design methods across the nation, and so those bridges don't show near as many cracks. Some of the ones that would do are places where the interstate falls on where the old state highway was, and one of the bridges is of an older vintage, and the one next to it might be a newer one. The study makes recommendations, and at a later meeting we could go over that task force report with you.
Someone has suggested that we go to bonding and just take care of all these bridges just all at once. Have you heard that discussion at all?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, the task force recommends that because of the critical nature of Interstate 5 and Interstate 84. At least examine that. We don't think waiting there is going to be a risk that should be taken. The task force did not look at the political legislative side, but more the nature of the bridges. And, but because there are so many and there's so much commerce there, we just think that Interstate 5 has to be dealt with and Interstate 84 to get a north-south and an east-west route.
Well, if you look at what we've looked at with the $400 million plus now, you know, the economic impact and what it's going to do, and you know, I think you could put a good argument together for economic stimulus, and is it going to improve our interstate commerce and so forth? What would be the impact there? Could you pencil it out? Maybe Mike could pencil it out and say, hey, we could do this, and here's going to be the return on your money, and it'll pay off in so long.
Mr. Chairman, one of the...
Is that task force's task?
It was the task force didn't really have the right makeup to do that economic analysis, but it is requested that we perform that, and it's probably more on what's the economic impact of not being able to use Interstate 5 as the driving force of, and so I think we will get that finished. The corridor analysis is going to require an economic and a structural analysis of what it takes to free them up, because there will have to be some method to determine what's the order in which you go through. Is it 26? Is it 58? How do you choose? And so we're recommending an in-depth study to come up with a strategy to move through the state.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
In a shorter timeline than that, could you put together something that would indicate to us how many projects? I mean, if we were to say, okay, here's the money, you can't build them all next year anyway. How many projects you could likely handle a year, both to contract out and then some in-house or whatever you would recommend doing with them, over and sort of lay out the top two categories over so we could see how many. Because if we did go to bonding, as Mike was explaining earlier, there's a timeline on those bonds mm-hmm. when you anticipate using them to see how we have to handle it. The other thing you need is a revenue stream, which
Chairman,
we're a little short on
Dukes,
at the moment.
That's my next assignment from Director.
Okay, it's good.
An implementation plan, if you will. We've got permitting issues, traffic issues, so if we were to replace those bridges on I-5, how would we go about doing it? And we'll bring industry together to work that out with us.
Okay. But it actually, our timeline-wise, would be helpful if that could happen in the next couple of months.
We plan to have it mm-hmm. ready prior to the session starting.
Okay, but not Thanksgiving prior to the session.
Quickly.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. We have to chew things over for okay. before we yes. launch into things like that.
Moving quickly through the rest, the earthquake portion, I think we've spoken of before, but on page 21.
Where was that? That big picture in 19. Where is that spot?
That's one of the California bridges.
Oh, okay.
We haven't had that in Oregon. Uh-huh. We're hoping to avoid that.
I was
that.
Trying to think. My goodness, I didn't remember anything like this.
The size of the seismic need is approaches $1 billion. And we have done a later slide will show we've been able to accomplish. The historic and coastal bridges, we've spent money so far. We have more to spend that protects these large bridges, hopefully to keep them as they are, either the protection of the existing ones, the cathodic protection that we've done, the movable bridges that need to be restored. Many of those are very old. And
could
so,
we note for the record that not all of those movable bridges need to continue to be movable bridges? Because they're old, there's no good reason to make them.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dukes, the commerce that was using some of the waterways in the 30s when they were built is far different than today. So.
Left town, yeah. They're just a little more difficult, Mr. Chair, as ODOT well knows. The ones that go up the successfully, we do.
Specific one in mind?
The asphalt doesn't always stay on when you got them lifted up.
The picture we didn't include.
But anyway, and they are more expensive because some of those wonderful historic old bridges, then you have to take it out and somebody's got to fabricate the thing, the machine to make it go up, and perhaps there's no, as you say, no business left there that actually needs it to continue to go up.
Page 24, and as we near the end, the rehabilitation and replacement is the other bridges that continue to age, and we can't forget. I think it's vital to recall or remember that there are other bridges, whether they're steel or a different concrete, that do age. We must continue to invest in those, and so if we're forced to take what funds there are and put them all into one category, the other ones just continue to age. So mm-hmm. the normal rehabilitation and replacement needs to take place. On page 26, we have the total need as we see it for the bridge picture at this point. And I think we see a total need of $3.1 billion. While OTIA 1 and OTIA 2 did significant work, and we're just, I don't know if tickled is the right professional word to use, but it's close mm-hmm. to be able to get this work done, it didn't change the overall outcome much. We went from $3.1 billion to $3.
Really made progress here.
But we are making progress, and so we appreciate it. The slide 27, I think, Chairman, touches on the safety piece. We continue to inspect the bridge. We restrict the loads when it's necessary, and we close it if it's necessary. In concluding, the cracked bridges, I think, will demand their own type of attention, and I would anticipate we'll get the study, Senator Dukes, earlier than Thanksgiving to be able to begin to set the stage for some way to fund that type of work. The bridges continue to age. The problem will be with us, and I'm just hopeful that we can continue the level of funding we have. With that, I think we've covered a quick overview of the bridge situation.
You've done an excellent job, right? Mm-hmm. Really is. Bill, you want to make some comments?
Let me just augment that with information on local agency bridges and maybe focusing in on the those bridges with the design problem that Tom talked about that were constructed in the late 40s through 60s. There are a number of those on the city and county system as well. But before I do that, I just wanted to reiterate on page 27, the slide that Tom provided there, indicates that at a minimum, our bridges, state and local government bridges, are inspected every 2 years. And that is done on the local government system by consulting bridge engineers. And it's paid for out of the local government's share of the highway bridge replacement program. So we have a regular ongoing program there, keeping track of the condition of the bridges. As a result of that, as Tom mentioned, we have 3,900 bridges under city and county jurisdiction.
3,900 bridges?
Yes. We'll get into this. There are more than that, but that's bridges 20 feet and greater on the National Bridge Inventory list. Well, there are many more than that, but not in this category, that need to have this frequency of inspection. Of that group, on the bridge inspection sufficiency rating list, there's about 300 of those are eligible or should be rehabilitated or replaced in the near future. There aren't sufficient funds to go around, so many of those are load limited. Signs posted that limit the weights that can go across those bridges. as Tom indicated, we have a fairly new problem, and that's the cracking problem of this suspect bridge design, is my term. these bridges designed in this period of time, there are about 300 of those on the city and county system. And we're working now with ODOT to get out and inspect those. We feel that if the ratio of severe cracking is similar to what ODOT found, we may have another 100 bridges, in addition to what Tom has mentioned here, that fall into that category that are on the city and county system. So that kind of expands the numbers that Tom has shared with you. We don't have the detail on that at this point, but we're working with ODOT to get that information so that at a subsequent time we can share with you a more complete picture of what it is on both the state and local agency system.
Mr. Chairman, if yes. I could add, when we mentioned the switching to a corridor approach, as we looked at corridors, our anticipation is to be a more comprehensive look at that corridor to include the highway bridges in the corridor, but also the local connecting bridges, mm-hmm. which makes the corridor viable.
It's the same concept you were talking about before.
And so that's our anticipation, is this comprehensive analysis would incorporate the state and local bridges in an overall corridor approach, as and we'll be bringing more information back on that.
Well, I want to thank you for a very thorough report, and I feel better. I mean, I knew we had a lot of bridge problems. I've been concerned about some of the safety, but I think you've reassured me now that you're making sure it's safe for me to drive across the bridge. So I think all of our students here today, as you go home today and you drive across the bridge, know this man says that bridge is okay.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
You make a good point. I think with all the media coverage that came out, the public is afraid now.
Yeah.
And I get people all the time who ask me,
when did all of this happen? Well, it didn't happen yesterday. The county, I know, and I don't know so much about what the state does in inspections. I know they do them, and I'm sure they're well done. The counties do, and cities, an excellent job. But again, as Bill explained, it's taking money out of what they could be doing to repair the bridges. Just, and as they find the cracked ones and such, and that are, you know, more cracked, then instead of the regular inspection, they're bringing people out, contractors out an additional period of time to come out and inspect those bridges more often so that they can watch those. And for governments that don't have a lot to start out with, they're sure isn't that big. Although some room for negotiating, and I think it's too big. It's a good thing they're putting the money there because they need to be doing that, but it doesn't leave much to do anything about the problem except to watch it. But I think if there's any way to get out the word to the public that the bridges are safe.
Well, I just realized that we have a...
No, I just gave it to you.
She just gave it to me. I guess I could stop my car, get out, and with this little deal, I can go check the bridge before I drive across it. That's right? This is what you call a crack comparator?
Yes, Senator, if you looked at one of the pictures in there,
you can see that
it was .08. That gives you you could look on there and see just how wide a crack that is.
It's going to take me a long time to make my trips if I have to stop and check every bridge. But
I don't want to know.
You don't want to know?
Nope.
All right, she doesn't want to know.
Tom said they're safe, that's good enough.
I'll keep my hard hat in the car. Hey, folks, thank you very much. This is Bruce, I'm going to introduce you in just a second to the next crowd. Just 10 seconds here, if you'll stay there just a minute. Thank you very much, Bill and Tom. Okay. Our next item on the agenda deals with a safety issue that was a member of the class just brought to my attention, wondering what they could do in the process. So we talked about it, and I said, well, I'll give you a few minutes on my committee time just to come explain what's going on. And, you know, there's certain things you've heard us talk today about cities and counties and state, and different people have different responsibilities. But Mr. Warner is the state director of all transportation. So when you drive across those bridges or you drive down the highway on a state highway, it's over here's the head man right here of the whole state. So I ask you if he wouldn't mind sticking around just to hear your presentation today. Now, he may have some advice for you, and again, your situation, whether it's city or county, or, you know, we'll hear from that. But if you didn't, I sure appreciate having the director stay. So at this time, we have the Chehalem Valley Middle School, who has a concern about a safety issue, and I'm going to ask them to come forward, identify themselves. And if you would introduce your teacher, are you short of chair?
Yes, I think so.
We have another chair we can pull up there.
Some of them do and some of them don't.
Is there a single chair there someplace?
There must be. That one over there. Okay.
Okay.
Not only is he a director, he's the director of seating.
Yes, he's director of transportation and director of seating for the state. Okay. Who's starting? Mark, you're starting. Okay, would you please identify yourself and introduce your colleagues, and then introduce your class and your teachers, if you would, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I am Mark Fatz, and I'm an eighth grader at Chehalem Valley Middle School, and we are here today to present our idea for a dangerous intersection near our school at State Highway 219 and Foothills Drive.
Okay. Do you want to introduce your colleagues or let them introduce themselves?
My name is Kayla Walter, and I'm also an eighth grader at Chehalem Valley Middle School.
Kayla? Yes. Kayla, okay.
My name is Aaron Myers, and I'm an eighth grader at Chehalem Valley Middle School.
My name is Colin Renick, and I'm also an eighth grader at Chehalem Valley Middle School.
Okay. Mark, do you want to introduce your teacher and your class?
My teacher is Miss McGallagher. She's a language arts and social studies teacher.
Okay.
And my class.
Okay. All of the youthful looking people in the room were part of your class. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. We may proceed.
We started investigating possible community issues we could focus in on using the curriculum Project Citizen. Project Citizen is a contest in which students research a problem and find a policy to change the problem. Students then propose a policy to local government to try to get the problem fixed. We are concerned with the safety of everyone that crosses State Highway 219. Many people cross to go to baseball games at the sports complex next to our school. Others go to the playground at the elementary school. About 20% of our students cross Highway 219 at least once a week. They must cross this road while cars are going 40 miles per hour, the posted speed limit at this intersection. And with a blind...
Do people drive the posted speed limit, or do they exceed it?
I'm sure they drive a little bit over it.
Do your parents drive over that speed limit?
Senator! They raised you well.
And a blind corner 1,000 feet away where the speed limit is 55. When the school is built, there's only a small number of houses on the opposite side of Highway 219. Now there are over 275 houses on that side, and many more being put in, many becoming duplexes. You can see these pictures on page 4 in here. It was estimated that this development, along with another development on Highway 219, will add 100 new students to our school alone in the next 5 years.
While contemplating over various solutions to our situation, we came up with 3 alternative policies: shower stoplight, flashing light, and crosswalk with cement island.
Say those again, please.
Stoplight.
Stoplight.
Flashing light.
Flashing.
And crosswalk with cement island.
Okay.
Research each policy to find out the pros and cons to help us decide on one of our chosen policies. A crosswalk with cement island provides pedestrians with a safe place to get halfway across the street. Unfortunately, they could also get stuck in the middle and have to wait a long time until crossing the rest of the way. A crosswalk is the least expensive and the easiest to install. Mm-hmm. However, it isn't enough to secure pedestrian safety on Oregon Highway 219 and Foothills Drive. A flashing light helps make drivers more aware of people that they want to cross the street. It costs $25,000 and could get ignored by drivers. They may get used to the light and avoid looking to see if someone wants to cross. Our third alternative policy is a stoplight, which forces cars to stop for pedestrians crossing the street and ensures that it is safe for them. It costs $175,000 and is usually paid for by either the city or the state. With the installation of a stoplight, there would need to be signs warning oncoming cars of the light. Combined, the intersection of Oregon Highway 219 and Foothills Drive would be safer for the public to cross.
In order to ensure the safety of pedestrians crossing this intersection, it is absolutely necessary to install a stoplight and crosswalk. This policy,
stoplight and, yes, and crosswalk, okay.
This policy is clearly the best to prevent any harm to pedestrians crossing this dangerous intersection. In a recent survey conducted at Chehalem Valley Middle School, it was found that 36 students cross the intersection daily, and an additional 48 cross at least once a week. Between 2:30 and 3:30 p.m., both the elementary and middle schools get out, and an average of 754 cars use the intersection during this time. This is nearly 300 more cars than were counted in the most recent traffic survey conducted by the city last summer. When car traffic is the highest, pedestrian traffic is also, greatly increasing the risk for accidents. Because there are currently no safety markers, it is vital to community safety to install a stoplight and crosswalk immediately. Just 528 feet past the intersection, State Highway 219 curves to the right and begins to climb the Chehalem Mountains. For more than 1,000 feet up this stretch of road, where the speed limit is 55 miles per hour, the intersection is completely unseen by oncoming cars. Only a stoplight and crosswalk, our chosen policy, will truly make the intersection safer for pedestrians.
During our project, we initially ran into some confusion with the government, more specifically with the Oregon Department of Transportation. Many there claimed that Highway 219 was a city road and therefore not in their jurisdiction. After meeting with Newburgh City Engineer Dan Danichik and the ODOT Safety Administrator Doug Bish, both determined that 219 was indeed a state road. They were also very helpful in giving us maps and information from previous surveys in the general area of 219. Doug Bish also gave us the number of other ODOT employees to contact. Mr. Robert Finn was one of those contacts and began to set up a safety analysis. If the analysis finds that the amount of cars on 219 every day meets a necessary warrant, then a traffic signal will immediately be placed in the location. We are now currently working with Kathy McConnell of ODOT's Region 2 in completing that very same safety analysis. From the school district, we have received a great deal of cooperation. Our school principal and the district superintendent, Paula Radich, have given us support from the beginning of our project. Paul Frankenberger also gave us information and support. At the beginning of our project, several of our students contacted the mayor, Chuck Cox. He was helpful in giving us cooperation from the Newbridge City Council. The City Council has given us a variety of information and arranged for us to present at the City Council meeting. As our project comes to a close, we still have many questions left to answer, like why are we experiencing such opposition to obtaining another safety analysis? Why was the recommendation from the previous analysis ignored? And
let's go back to that one. Could you?
Yes. At the bottom of the previous analysis, there was a recommendation for another analysis to be done during school time, but it was never done.
And who was to have done that?
The city, also.
The city was to have done it?
Yeah.
What does the city say about that?
We talked to Paul Frankenberger from the school district, and he said that they sent a preliminary survey out, but they didn't think there was that great of a difference to do a survey, so they didn't do one. But in our survey, it almost doubled between the summer and school time.
Okay.
As we end our project, we hope to answer these questions and make this dangerous intersection better for the general public.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. We'd be happy to answer any questions you have now.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
How long have you been working on this project?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dukes, we've been working on it for about a month and a half now.
You've done it.
3 months.
You've done a lot of work in that short period of time.
Yes, thank you.
And have you spoken with folks from ODOT since now you know that it's a state highway?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dukes, I've personally been involved in speaking with several ODOT employees, like I mentioned. Doug Bish, ODOT Safety Administrator, Robert Finn, he's the head of Region 2, and Kathy McConnell, one of Region 2's employees. Mm-hmm. Mainly, we've been trying to get another safety analysis done at the intersection.
The question I have is this, and you say Highway 219 is a state highway, but the spot you're talking about is within the city limits. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Roger Demers, within the city limits. Okay, the question I have, and let's see if we have anybody from ODOT here. Can we get an answer to that question? When it's the director, do you have a? Are you able to respond to that?
Yeah.
You can let him slide in there a bit.
I just spit that.
Okay. If it's a state highway and city limits, who has jurisdiction? Who has responsibility?
I'm going to listen carefully because we've been fighting this battle for years on the coast.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, and the students here from Chehalem Mountain School, first off, I want to say I'm impressed. These folks, in 3 months' time, know more about the process of getting a signal or any other traffic control device on the state highway than I would say 95% of the population does. So that's a good speed. First off, we have state highways, and I will verify that Highway 219 is a state highway. It is a state highway that goes through the city of Newburgh. It is under the jurisdiction of the state of Oregon, in other words, my department. So it would be we who need to authorize and approve any signal that would go into that location. And I think what the students have found is we do need to do some work to see if that signal is warranted to make sure that's put in and it would actually improve safety rather than give a false sense of security there to the students attempting to cross that roadway. And I think they've done a great start here. What I would like to do is I will volunteer that I'll have our area manager in that particular area get a hold of this class and who is actually the one that can really look at all of the areas that you've been talking to and give you some overall perspectives. I think what they're also going to find out is about how we fund transportation improvements.
I was going to ask you that question.
And again, what various types of funds can be used for specific types of projects like this. I think they'll also find out that safety is one of our number one priorities at the Department of Transportation, and obviously school safety is one of those ones we're very concerned about. And the fact that the students can stay around a bit, they're going to. I think the next presentation you have is from my transportation safety manager, Troy Costales, who can talk about what's going on in the state of Oregon with traffic safety. And he's a very valuable resource. And I could also volunteer him to talk with your class or maybe get you some information. would help out. So I don't know whether I answered your question, Mr. Chairman.
All right, thank you.
Well, yeah, I just wanted to throw out one thing. I think while all of this is being done, we need to bear in mind this is a unique opportunity.
Yeah.
At this age, they either stay engaged with government or they become disillusioned. So it's a wonderful opportunity to keep a group of young people engaged, knowing that government can help them. Besides, in that $400 million, there's got to be a little bit someplace.
Any other questions you folks have of us? I need to know one thing, because sometimes there's a conflict of interest. Do any of you have any association or relationship with any member of this committee? We would need that for the record.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I believe that I'm your great nephew.
Oh, I see.
Well, that automatically disqualifies him.
I thought we ought to get that on the record someplace along the line, Mark.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I want to thank you a lot for coming. You guys have done a very good job, and as Mr. Warner said, you know more about now about how transportation works and how the process works than most people in Oregon, including most members of the legislature, Mr. Chair.
That's true. That's true.
Would you let us know how this goes? I mean,
we'll keep in touch.
Bringing us in sort of in the middle, yeah, I'd like to know if this works out for you and if, you know, what you end up with or without. I know that we have a big concern, as do most Oregonians, about safety around schools. We had an unfortunate situation on the edge of Portland not too long ago, and we want to do our best to make sure that that doesn't happen again, which is why we have all the flashing lights around schools and things like that. So let us know what happens.
I would like to, yes. Yes, please. We will, I tell you what, we'll just recess for a minute once we're done here before we go into the next session and be happy to do that, you bet. We love to have our pictures taken. And they also know that I had the whole class down. They were down in the filming room, so they know that they're being filmed right now, and they know how that's going to, and we're ordering a tape of this, too, so they'll have it, the school will have a tape. But yes, the teacher has the right to speak. Why don't you?
Because I spent a lot of time on the earth, and because you said yourself, I like the card.
He likes that woman.
Okay, very good. Okay, very good. Well, once again, I really do want to commend, and I know this is a class project, and you four represent the rest of the class out there, and you're all involved in this project, so it's very, very good. And I don't know how much time you can stay for a few minutes for the safety part. All right. Pardon?
Probably 10 minutes.
Okay. What we'll do, folks, we're going to recess for about 1 minute.